Francis pens a blistering letter to bishops assailing President Trump's immigration initiatives. Here to react and explain the administration's policy is Trump's border czar, Tom Holman. With their perspective on the Pope's immigration letter and some newly appointed U.S. bishops is the Papal Posse, Father Gerald Murray and Robert Royal. And the Blaze's Chris Bedford joins us with his thoughts on the chaotic political environment in Washington, D.C. And then Grammy winner Lee Greenwood tells us the backstory of God Bless the USA. The World Over begins right now.
Now, Raymond Arroyo.
A warm welcome to all of you joining us in the United States and the world over. What a show we have for you. If you'd like to comment, you can send me an X post. I'm at Raymond Arroyo or at Arroyo Grande on YouTube. When Archbishop Thomas Wenske of the USCCB Committee on Migration joined us recently, I told you we plan to cover all sides of this immigration issue. Indeed, we've been doing it since this show began. This week, Pope Francis waded into the debate with a very pointed letter warning Americans bishops that President Trump's immigration and border initiatives are a problem. For the administration's perspective on immigration law enforcement, we are joined now by former ICE director and current Trump border czar, Tom Holman. Tom, thanks for being with us. I know you're in New York, and I want to get to that in a moment. I've got to share the big news of the week, Pope Francis's letter to the bishops of the U.S. regarding the president's immigration initiatives. I want to get your reaction. This is what he had to say. I'll pull a bit of it. I have followed closely the major crisis that is taking place in the United States with the initiation of a program of mass deportations. The rightly formed conscience cannot fail to make a critical judgment and express its disagreement with any measure that tactically or explicitly identifies the illegal status of some migrants with criminality. At the same time, one must recognize the right of a nation to defend itself and keep communities safe. That said, the act of deporting people who in many cases have left their own lands for reasons of extreme poverty or insecurity, exploitation, persecution, or serious deterioration of the environment damages the dignity of many men and women and their entire families and places them in a state of particular vulnerability and defensiveness. That was the Pope's letter of February 10th. The Pope is very concerned, Tom, about the dignity of the immigrant regardless of status. Are you and the president respecting the dignity of these deportees?
We absolutely are. And what the Pope needs to understand is that President Trump and I have been very clear that our prioritization right now are public safety threats and national security threats. These are people illegally in the United States that create horrendous crimes, commit horrendous crimes in the United States. We've seen numerous young women raped, murdered, burned alive. And these people aren't supposed to be our number one, and they're a public safety threat. We're trying to protect the community. And as far as border enforcement, illegal immigration is down 90%. What does that mean when it's down 90%, Raymond? When 90% less people are coming, how many women are being raped by the cartels? Because studies have been done that 31% of women that make that journey through the cartels get sexually assaulted. So when President Trump has illegal immigration on 90%, how many women aren't being sexually assaulted? How many children aren't dying crossing the river? How many women and children aren't sex trafficked in this country? How many Americans aren't dying from fentanyl poisonings? President Trump's policies save lives. We have a right to have a secure border. We have the right to our sovereignty, just like the Vatican has a wall around them. We have a right to protect American citizens. We have a right to reduce illegal alien crime in this country, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Tom Holman, when you read that about, you know, focused on the dignity of the immigrant, illegal or otherwise, did you have any thoughts about what about the dignity of our own citizens and their protection and welfare and well-being?
And it's exactly true. We're trying to protect American citizens' lives. We're trying to protect their prosperity. But look, I'm not anti-immigrant. This country's built on immigrants. We're all immigrants. My family came here and a long time ago. This isn't about attacking immigrants, but it's about illegal immigration. What we need to understand, people think illegal immigration is a victimless crime, right? That people just come here for a better life, and I get that. But what's happening is we got millions of people coming to our borders making an asylum claim. They're claiming they're escaping fear and persecution from their home government because of race, religion, and political affiliation. That's simply not true. If you look at immigration court data over the last 10 years, nearly 9 out of 10 people that claim asylum at our border are making a false asylum claim. They don't claim that they don't get an asylum claim. They don't. The courts don't award them a claim, and they get already deported. But meanwhile, while the millions of people making these false claims to asylum, there are, like you said a few minutes ago, there are millions of people in this world. I'm going to say millions, hundreds of thousands of people in this world that really do need our protection, that really are escaping fear and persecution of their home government, and they're sitting in the back seat where all these fraudulent asylum claims. So we're trying to do the right thing for the Americans. We're trying to do the right thing for the immigrants. What we've done, like I'll say it again, under Joe Biden with open borders, we had over 4,000 migrants have died crossing the border. When President Trump has it down 90%, how many lives are we saving? Not only Americans dying from fentanyl, but the migrants making that dangerous journey. President Trump saves lives with his policies.
Tom, as a Catholic, what was your reaction when you read that papal letter? I mean, he's basically equating illegal immigrants here with the Holy Family fleeing Herod.
Look, you know, I'm a lifelong Catholic. I grew up in a strong Catholic household. I was baptized a Catholic, had my first communion a Catholic, had my confirmation. And, you know, I love the Catholic Church. But I think the Pope has lost his way a little bit. The Catholic Church has problems. Please fix the Catholic Church. I love the Catholic Church. Well, he needs to fix the Catholic Church and concentrate on his problems and leave the border problems to us. I mean, he stay in his lane, I stay in my lane. But as a lifelong Catholic, please fix the church. I mean, we've lost a lot of membership. We lost a lot of the flock, and going to Mass isn't the same anymore. So, you know, concentrate on the Catholic Church, and let's get back to the Catholic Church I grew up in, where you actually did call out abortion. You didn't say that a president or someone in the Congress is a good Catholic, even though they support abortion. I mean, let's get back to the base of where the Catholic Church is. I love that Catholic Church. The Catholic Church today, I'm disappointed in. And I hope he listens to us all, because it needs to get fixed. It needs to be addressed.
Hmm. Tom, we recently had Archbishop Wenske, Thomas Wenske, on. He's a member of that the Bishop's Committee on Migration. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago. He told me that the USCCB and these other Catholic NGOs, that they only settle refugees who are not immigrants in his estimation, but they're vetted by the government. Is that true in your experience? Are these Catholic NGOs only settling refugees?
No, they're not. No, they're not. And look, you know, I know for a fact that Catholic Social Service, all these NGOs made billions of dollars, and to bring people in this country that they know aren't supposed to be here, that aren't true asylum seekers. I just gave you a stat: 9 out of 10 of these people have no asylum claim. They're coming for a better life, a job, and I get that. But when you overwhelm the border, here's what Catholic Charities, the rest of you need to understand: what you help this process, which you are doing. When you make the process easier for illegal aliens coming across the border, and you're going to give them housing, give them food, and help them, and give them money, and all this other stuff, you are feeding a monster that kills thousands of people every year. You need to understand what you call illegal immigration. These people coming across the border. The problem is when you overwhelm the border patrol, millions of people coming in, and up to 70% of agents were pulled off the line. Some sectors, 100% of the agents were pulled offline to make sandwiches, change diapers, and do that humanitarian mission that they have to do because, you know, we got to take care of these people. While you're overwhelming the Border Patrol doing this humanitarian crisis, the majority of Border Patrol is pulled off the border, off their Homeland Security mission, and that's when the fentanyl comes across that killed 250,000 Americans. That's when the sex trafficking increased 600%. That's when people from the terrorist country come across the border. That's when the sex trap, all this other bad stuff happened because you overwhelmed the Border Patrol. So illegal immigration, you think it's innocent? It is not. Illegal immigration has a whole ugly underbelly. I've stood in back to a trailer with 19 dead people at my feet, including a 5-year-old little boy that suffocated to death. I've talked to little girls as young as 9 that were raped by multiple men in the cartel. illegal immigration is not a victimless crime, and everybody should understand that. So rather than feeding this beast, fight against it and ask for secure borders. Secure borders saves lives. When President Trump has immigration, those he has right now, we're saving hundreds of lives every day. How many children aren't drowning in the river? How many women aren't being sexually assaulted by the cartels? How many women and children aren't being sex trafficked in this country? Again, we're saving lives. And what they've done in the last 4 years is feed the beast and make it easier for people to cross the border, because people knew, I cross the border, I'll get a free airline ticket to sit in my choice, I'll get a free place to stay, I'll get three meals a day, I get free medical care.
Yeah. And you might even get money for a startup and a car. I mean, we're now learning HHS was giving billions of dollars away, hundreds of billions of dollars. And again, what people don't understand, if you're worried about human dignity, Tom, you and I have been at that border. Catholic Charities and these NGOs, in many cases, are the final handoff for the cartels. And when you look at these church-affiliated NGOs, Catholic Charities, Catholic Relief Services, these local migration and refugee offices, they've received billions of dollars, Tom, in federal funds over the last few years to move migrants into the mainland. How much of this reaction that we're seeing from the Vatican and from others is about the freezing of those federal funds, do you think?
I think, and look, they made billions of dollars, and I can tell you right now it's going to be investigated how all this money was spent, because I've gotten reports that there has been U.S. citizens show up at a Catholic Charities place, and they were turned down when they asked for help because they weren't getting paid for it. So, you know, all this stuff's going to be under investigation, how these billions of dollars got funneled to groups that helped, that I won't say complicit, but involved in the trafficking of women and children across this country, working, and they may not intentionally did it, but they're helping the cartels create this big machine of trafficking to the United States, alien smuggling, which again overwhelms the border till all these other things happen. I'm not going to say they're complicit. They know exactly how deep this goes, but they certainly didn't ask questions. They certainly didn't push back on what they knew was a smuggling cycle. And what they did when they finally did release them, whether they know it or not, they released them to traffickers who's going to force these people into labor, both forced labor and forced sex trafficking. So when they went in with hands out, eyes shut. And that's not acceptable to me as a Catholic. It's not acceptable. They need to be held accountable, and they will be held accountable because there's going to be investigations how this all happened.
Yeah. Tom, Archbishop Joseph Nauman of Kansas City, Kansas, wrote a recent column mentioning the obligation of the government to protect its citizens. And he wrote this before the Pope's letter, and I'm going to read it to you. It says, "It is inconceivable that our previous administration either did not know or care about the location of the circumstances of approximately 300,000 children and youth who entered the United States during the past 4 years. We do not know how many of them have become victims of human trafficking, gangs, and drug dealers. This is a national disgrace. I salute President Trump and his administration for making it a priority to find these lost children and youth." That's Archbishop Joseph Nauman. Give me your thoughts on that column, and tell me what you found, Tom. You've been on site of these recent ICE raids vis-a-vis the trafficking of children and or adults. What have you seen in Chicago, in New York, when you're there with the agents?
Well, first of all, I agree with this columnist. He's exactly right. Under the last administration, over half a million children were separated from their families, put in the hands of criminal cartels to enter this country illegally. And who knows what happened to them during that journey. I can tell you many of them were sexually assaulted. I know, because I've done this for 3.5 decades. I know how these groups operate. And when we go to these cities, Chicago, New York, these other cities, well, look, we've already found children working in meat packing plants and a midnight shift, cleaning up entrails of the slaughter that day and not getting paid. We've seen adult males who had were the sponsor of a dozen young girls. We, under CBP One app, we found people that were sponsored by a male. There's 1,600 people sponsored by one person, and that person's been dead for several years. So a lot of these people have been sex trafficked and forced labor trafficked in this country, and we're already finding them. And President Trump committed that he's going to find these over 300,000 missing children. President Trump gave me three things to do: secure the border, run a deportation operation, and find these children. So we're working on that now to try to, you know, not every one of these children are in a bad way. Some are going to be, we'll find them with family. But many of these children, after 3.5 decades of doing trafficking investigations, many of these children we're going to find in pornographic movies. We're going to find they're in a sex slavery. We're going to find they're in forced labor. And President Trump's committed to finding them because this administration not only released them to unvetted sponsors that didn't fingerprint, didn't do background checks, they're not even looking for them. So it's taking the Trump administration, day one, he told me, find these children. That's what we're working on now, to rescue these children.
That's astounding. And Tom, I just read this story today that ICE in Boston arrested this Guatemalan illegal alien. He's charged with multiple counts of aggravated and forcible child rape in Massachusetts. What about the dignity of that child, Tom? I mean, I think that's getting lost in all of this. We just don't talk about these victims.
No, you know, one thing I talk about, and I hate talking about it because sometimes I get emotional about it, but I'm getting better at it. There was a time where I got on my knees to look eye to eye with a 9-year-old little girl who was raped multiple times by members of the cartel who demanded that as part of their crossing, her family. That little girl, when I looked in her eyes, everything innocent and pure, you just tell it was ripped from her. She's never going to be the same. She obviously lost faith in humanity. Her life will never be the same. That little girl is going to suffer now until the day she dies because what happened to her is just such a tragedy. And when you look at a little girl's eyes, 9 years old, you should be happy. She should be the happiest little thing in the world, right? She's a child. But she wasn't. She was attacked by grown men crawling on her, taking anything innocent and pure from her. And that changed me forever. I mean, and I've talked to a lot of victims of sex trafficking, and they're all bad stories. And there's a lot of them in this country now. The other thing we need to deal with is that this country is a customer for sex trafficking. We need to deal with the ones who are buying this service. But at the same time, let's stop feeding that service through open borders. Yeah. Let's shut it down and save some lives.
Yeah. Tell me about these leaks of the ICE raids that you've been conducting across the country. I mean, these are aliens with criminal records that you're extraditing and trying to locate. There are reports that they were coming from inside the FBI, the leaks. And I know the new AG is promising prosecution, rather. How close are you to identifying those parties responsible?
Well, I'm leaving that up. As far as that leak, I'm leaving that up to the Attorney General's office because they have their own internal affairs separate from what DHS has. As far as the first leak, we know who that is now. That's being dealt with severely. And there is information that tends to leave. Maybe it's the FBI leaked the second one. But I want to say this. We'll find out who it is, and he'll be dealt with harshly, and he'll be prosecuted. Not only lose his job and lose his pension, be prosecuted. But I want to make clear this. There are thousands of FBI special agents on the street with us every day in New York, Chicago, and across the country that are doing the right thing. They put a badge on their the chest. They wear that gun on their hip. They put a Kevlar vest. They're doing the dangerous job and doing the right thing. And it's just a shame you got one or two out there that want to do something stupid and put officers at risk. When you leak an operation, it's just that if they think, oh, this is for political reason, I don't want to arrest the illegal aliens, whatever his reasoning is, but when you leak an operation, we go out there, now the bad guy knows we're coming. It's only a matter of time for officers are ambushed by someone who just don't care about life. So they need to understand, not only you messing up the operation, you're putting officers at greater risk of harm. So let me dealt with hard, and maybe we need to make an example of somebody, but that needs to end. This isn't a game. Again, we're looking for the worst of the worst. And the worst thing you can do, is tell them we're coming. Here we come. We're coming tomorrow. It's ridiculous, and we're dealing with it. The Attorney General is on this. Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, she's promising penalties on this, serious criminal penalties. So as we find out more, we're going to hold people accountable.
Mm. Earlier this year, Tom, and we discussed this a little bit, the Vatican, without much fanfare, increased its penalties for people who dare to enter the sovereign Vatican territory illegally. Criminal prosecution with fines up to $25,000, prison sentences up to 4 years. more if the incursions involve violence. And anyone actually convicted of an illegal incursion could be barred from legal reentry for up to 15 years. Tom Holman, do those sound like reasonable protections for a sovereign nation? And if you were the Vatican border czar, what else would you suggest?
Well, first of all, now you just told me that their consequences are more severe than ours.
Yeah,
when you enter our country illegally here, it's a misdemeanor. So, you know, for him, judging how we protect our sovereignty, at one point the Pope said we shouldn't build a wall, and he's got a wall around the Vatican, and his penalties are worse than ours. So I don't know how he gets off judging us. I know one time he said, well, we got a wall, but we got gates. People can still come in. Well, we got gates, too. They're called a port of entry. That's where people come in legally. So it's, wow. Maybe I'll take a page out of his book and take his penalties because they're more extreme than our penalties. Look, I'm going to say it again. Secure borders just isn't about saving lives, but protect our national security. We need to know who's coming in, where they're coming in, why they're coming in, and where they're coming from. We need to know that to protect our national security.
Tom, the president also reinstated his Remain in Mexico policy, which he established in the first term. He officially designated those cartels in Mexico that you've seen up close as terrorist organizations. Tell the audience what that classification of the cartels does and how important that is to your work.
Well, I pushed for that classification. I've been pushing that for years because the criminal cartels in Mexico have killed more Americans than every terrorist organization in the world combined, right?
Wow.
So, and they act like a terrorist organization. They kill people. They kill journalists. They kill politicians. They kill judges. They kill thousands in the media. And they terrorize government officials. A lot of government officials in Mexico is corrupt. But some of them don't want to be corrupt. But when you have a cartel member coming up and say, you know what, you're going to turn a blind eye to what I'm about to do, I'm going to kill you and your family. So, you know, I think Mexico would love it if the United States could wipe the cartels off the face of the earth with their help. So it's important because it opens up all these other toolboxes we can use to attack the cartels. And not just attack them in Mexico, but attack them worldwide. Some of these cartels, the Jalisco cartel, I think they're in 43 countries around the globe now. And not only are they moving dope into our country, or drugs in our country, now they have a foothold in the major cities here. So they used to be just about smuggling the product into the United States to be sold in our neighborhoods. Now they actually established footholds in our major cities. Now they're taking over the distribution network in the United States. We need to take them out. They need to be dealt with. And by doing so, you're saving the country of Mexico. I'm sure that life would be much better in Mexico without the cartel running operations down there. Threatening their military, their police officers, and their politicians. Thousands of people die every year in Mexico at the hands of criminal cartels. I would think they would be blessed by having President Trump take those cartels out of business because life in Mexico would be so much better.
Yep. One of the most controversial orders is the president ended birthright citizenship, what used to be called anchor babies, automatic U.S. citizenship for a child born in the U.S. A federal judge temporarily blocked that presidential action, Tom. Is this fair, given the longstanding constitutional protection of the 14th Amendment? And does halting birthright citizenship attack human dignity, in your estimation?
Well, look, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I've read the 14th Amendment. I don't think it's clear that it's. I see people say, well, constitutionally, they're U.S. citizens. Well, I don't. I don't see that. I think it's this question's been at us for decades. I think it's about time the Supreme Court weighs in on it. And is it constitutional or not? And does it really mean? Because you keep talking about a case of the Wong case where I think it was Japanese nationals gave birth to someone here and they classified him a U.S. citizen. But remember, those Japanese nationals, see the Japanese or Chinese, I don't quite remember because I'm taking myself back to the academy where I took immigration law. They were here they were illegally here. They were admitted here on a visa. So that's different being here admitted by the US government that have control over them, they have as a child, rather than an illegal alien who have no control or no jurisdiction over because they're here illegally. We don't even know they're here. So I think it's a big difference. So I want the Supreme Court to address it. But I will tell you one thing. Birthright citizenship is a huge driver of illegal immigration. We got what we call birth tourism. The biggest offenders are China and Russia. They come over here and they're 8-9 months pregnant. They come here for one reason. They come here on a visitor visa or a student visa or some other visa. to have a child. And have a child that's going to be a U.S. citizen. Now that child qualifies for all of our social benefits and it's their foothold into this country. So not only do we have birth tourism issue, you got an illegal migration issue. And let me just say, use one example. Under Barack Obama, Jay Johnson was the secretary. We had a lot of family units crossing the border illegally. Most of them, like I said, 90% lost their case. So we went looking for them to remove them. And I remember it, 42% of those family cases, the female mother was already pregnant or had a U.S. citizen child. So one of the first things they do, and people say, well, illegal aliens don't take social services. First of all, that's a lie. They do. But when you have a U.S. citizen child, it opens up all kinds of social services at taxpayer expense. So it is a driver of illegal migration. Again, overwhelms the border patrol, which causes all these other bad things to happen. So I'm looking forward to the Supreme Court finally settling this issue. And whether it's, you know, no, they're not, or yes, they are, let's answer the question and end the conversation once and for all.
Tom, Asian affairs expert Gordon Chang was on the show last week, and he warned of the security threats coming from the northern border with Canada. Given all the attention that we're paying to the southern border, what are you seeing up north, and is the administration spending sufficient time and attention on that border?
We are. I am. I've done a lot of work on the northern border. I've met with Canadian officials, the foreign minister, and the head of the RCMP, our Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I met with their borders are. I met a lot of officials talk about what more they can do to secure that northern border and what more we can do. So the northern border, people need to understand, after 9/11, a study was done, I think it was by GAO, a federal agency of the study, saying a terrorist threat entering the northern border is 10 times more likely than the southern border because we got all these resources on the southern border. So the bottom line is the northern border is under-resourced. We got very few agents up there. We need to build that up. We need to build up the technology, and we need to have a close relationship with Canada. One of the things we need Canada to do is tighten up their immigration rules. It's very easy to enter Canada from any other country. And a lot of the Pakistani, Indian, Turks, they get in the, which are special interest countries. There are some affiliation with terrorist groups. Get into Canada and make an easy walk across the northern border where I grew up in the Thousand Islands. You can come across the St. Lawrence River in 3 minutes and get lost within 1,000 islands. And so we need more border security on the northern border. We need more technology. We need a closer relationship with Canada. And we need Canada to step up. And which President Trump has, you know, pressured them. And now they're putting more resources on their southern, our northern border. So Canada's already stepping up. Yeah. We'll see if they finish the job. But I like the first step. So I'm saying, and that all to the thanks of President Trump holding them accountable.
Good. You're meeting with the mayor of New York. You met with the mayor of New York today. And I see the background there. Are these migrant hotels all over the city, are those finally going to close? And where will those people go, Tom Homan?
Well, look, the federal government's going to stop funding these things. As we fund these things more and more, again, if you believe in getting the United States, be released and get a free airline ticket and get a free hotel room, get 3 meals a day and free medical care, the whole world's going to come. So, you know, we'll leave it up to, you know, the way it used to be, the social service and these groups, private groups, they can certainly, you know, fund some of this stuff for the U.S. government. We're going to be out of the business of this because it's a magnet for more illegal immigration to come. They think they're not going to be held to any standard, any rule, no consequences for entering this country illegally, which is a crime.
Yeah, and Tom, what's never reported is we displace American citizens from many of these government housing opportunities, even welfare programs. We displace them for these illegal migrants, much to their chagrin. They're really upset about it. I've interviewed some of them.
You're exactly right. Look, I went to Chicago and I met with the black community. I met with many black pastors who said, look, we got homeless U.S. citizens who pay taxes on the street. While people who are illegal are sitting in hotel rooms getting 3 meals a day and free medical care. We got homeless vets. Go to Washington. You've been to Washington, D.C., right near the Fox headquarters there. You see homeless people there at the train station. A lot of them homeless vets. I was in Phoenix, Arizona not long ago during the summer. We got homeless vets living in tents in 115-degree weather. And right down the street, I was there, right down the street, there's a hotel that these NGOs leased, putting illegal aliens in who have a shower, who have air conditioning, have 3 meals a day, Have a toilet, for God's sakes. Free medical care. And we got homeless vets down the street sleeping in a tent at 115 degrees. So you're exactly right, Raymond. U.S. citizens, our veterans have been displaced to care for people who aren't supposed to be here. Now, look, I'll say this.
We can't have that.
If there's a labor need for these people, then Congress needs to address that. But the answer isn't open the borders up. Let's overwhelm the Border Patrol, and let's tell the whole world you can enter a country illegally, which is a crime. You get released and get a free hotel room, free airline ticket, free. You're telling the whole world it's okay to come, or we got to stop. We got to have consequences. We cannot take care of the whole world and leave our citizens out in the cold. We can't do it, especially like right now in New York City. I've been here for a couple hours. I see people sleeping with blankets.
Right. All over the city. This is a midtown Manhattan. But again, and this, we should preface this by saying this is a country with the most generous immigration policy of any country in the world. I mean, and still our citizens are being abused and moved aside when they need care as well. I want to end with this, Tom. The newly appointed Archbishop of Detroit, Edward Weissenberger, once suggested when he was Bishop of Tucson back in 2018 that canonical penalties, the withholding of communion, be considered for Catholics who were involved in border enforcement practices that he considered morally wrong. Border Patrol agents and people like you who are in charge of policy, how do you as a Catholic process something like that? And how do you reconcile or see your work alongside your faith?
I didn't know that. It angers me. I love the Catholic Church. I love being Catholic. We're saving lives every day. We are rescuing women and children that are sex trafficked. We are trying to secure the border to save lives. We're trying to shut down the cartels who sex assault women. We're trying to stop sex trafficking of women and children. We want to find 300,000 missing children, many of them in sex slavery. We're trying to save lives, which a Catholic should do, and we should be proud of doing it. I thought, back in the day, the Catholic Church believed in the enforcement of law. And I would think, the doctrine still says that. So, again, I'm disappointed. The Catholic Church needs to change, and our current pope needs to, tackle that problem. And so, I'm disappointed. It's sad. It's sad where I grew up as a child, loving the Catholic Church. I remember going to Catholic Mass with my parents every Sunday, and we had seven kids. We took two of the small pews. That was a Holman pew. And God help anybody who sat in that pew before we got there, because my dad would get angry. That's our pew. Go from that where a whole family goes to Mass together to having the Catholic Church attack people who enforce the law and save lives, just incredible.
Yeah. Well, Tom, to my eye, it sounds like you are acting in the interest of the common good and trying to protect lives. And that is at the heart of the gospel and Catholic doctrine. Last time I checked. Tom Holman, we'll leave it there. We'll check in with you in the days ahead. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Father Raymond. I appreciate you.
This week, I sat down with legendary recording artist and country star Lee Greenwood on the Arroyo Grande podcast, and we talked about the power of adapting to the circumstances before us. He didn't even start out as a country artist, which is something I didn't know. And yet, that's where he forged his career. He also told me about the inspiration for his signature anthem and presidential theme song, God Bless the USA. Take a look. I mean, you told me Elvis was a partial influence.
Yes.
Tell us about that story.
So when I saw him singing, he'd always end his show with a trilogy, and it ended up with Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
He was very reverent, and I liked that. He could have been a preacher. He was not from Memphis, Tennessee. He was from Mississippi.
That's right.
But he was raised in Memphis, mm-hmm. and Graceland, therefore, was built in Memphis. But I said, if I ever get my country music career, and I said, I'm going to do the trilogy to close my show, and I will kill them with it. And so, lo and behold, I wrote my own.
To watch the entire interview with Lee Greenwood, subscribe to Arroyo Grande with Raymond Arroyo on our YouTube page. And wherever you get your podcasts, visit RaymondArroyo.com for all the links. We don't want you to miss an episode. And there's a cultural emphasis here that I just can't get to on our show every week. So take a look. You'll enjoy it. There's lots going on this week. The Vatican announced the appointment of several new bishops here in the U.S. And as you heard, the Pope is wading into the immigration debate in the United States. Here with analysis Of that and much more, the Papal Posse, editor-in-chief of thecatholicthing.org, Robert Royal, and canon lawyer, priest of the Archdiocese of New York, Father Gerald Murray. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. I want to start with this aspect of the Pope's letter to the U.S. bishops. When Vice President Vance was critical of the bishops' use of government funding for these migration programs, he referenced Ordo Amoris. This is an Augustinian Thomistic principle regarding the appropriate order of love. God first, then ourselves, then our family and our neighbor. Pope Francis made a pointed reference to this in his letter, and I want to get your reaction. He writes, "The true Ordo Amoris that must be promoted is that which we discover by meditating constantly on the parable of the Good Samaritan. That is, by meditating on the love that builds a fraternity open to all without exception, but worrying about personal, community, and national identity apart from these considerations easily introduces an ideological criterion that distorts social life and imposes the will of the strongest as the criterion of truth." Father, the vice president seemed to be referencing subsidiarity in that comment. What do you make of the Pope's correction here, if you will?
I was surprised by that, Raymond, because this is something that the vice president just said about a week or 10 days ago, and now we're getting an instant reaction, so to speak. Yeah, the order of love is absolutely consistent with Catholic teaching. We owe God the first place our love, but then we owe family members love, and we have responsibility for them. We have to make sacrifices for them that we don't have to make for strangers. I mean, I if I'm a father of a family, I have to put a house, put a roof over my wife and kids. I have to earn money, pay for their clothing and food. I don't have a similar obligation to someone who lives, you know, far away and is not related to me. Now, I'm encouraged to do what I can to help those people, but certainly that could never be to the neglect of my family. So, yeah, there is an order of love, and it's basically God's will for how mankind progresses.
Hmm. Bob, can you remember Pope Francis speaking out this vociferously against a Catholic elected official? I mean, this is rather pointed.
Yeah, it's actually quite remarkable. And it's clear, too, that this was designed to respond specifically to J.D. Vance, because there's a distinction in that letter saying that the people who have an illegal status, now he admits that this is an illegal status, that's quite an admission, because mm-hmm. here in the United States, we're not allowed to call people illegal. We're told that that no one is illegal, which is an argument that no one has ever made, but that, you know, that's the way that we kind of hear people respond to this massive immigration that we've got. But he admitted that there was an illegal status there, but he said that this should not be equated with criminality. Now, again, this is joking around with terms. It's like saying that people are undocumented. Well, yeah, it's not that they just lack paperwork. No one likes paperwork. They're here having broken a law. So there is criminality. And of course, in addition to that, every country has a right to decide what it regards as criminal and what it doesn't regard as criminal. So now there's never been, as many people have pointed out, there was never this sort of response to Joe Biden promoting trans and gayness all around the globe via our various agencies. I mean, we had Teddy Kennedy and Nancy Pelosi as Catholics advancing abortion, criticizing the church for not accepting women priests. And yet we got no response from the Pope over that sort of thing. So why this? It just strikes you as particularly political, and I think that that's unfortunate.
Yeah, Bishop Strickland and others have pointed out, you know, just what you mentioned there, that we don't remember, Father, the Pope speaking out when Joe Biden was moving gender ideology or funding abortion abroad. Nary a peep. But now that some immigration funds are being frozen and you're enforcing the border, suddenly it's the end of times. Meanwhile, the Vatican just did it. As Tom Holman pointed out, their penalties are stricter than the United States. I'll give you the word there, Father.
Yeah, no, the Vatican in December issued a decree regulating how to deal with illegal aliens in Vatican City State, and it includes their arrest, deportation, and they could even be prosecuted and banned and all the rest. So, no, there's a lot of inconsistency here because a social problem that is not restricted to the United States has to be dealt with according to the basis of fairness and law, not slogans. And in this letter to the American bishops, the Pope says that everyone has an infinite dignity and that's, you know, kind of surpasses any legal arrangements. Well, no, the fact that I'm have human dignity, but I enter a country legally, that doesn't give me a free ride. I can't say you can't arrest me because the Pope said you can't offend my dignity. No, that doesn't work that way. You violate the law.
Not even in the Vatican.
Penalties. Yeah. Well, exactly. In the Vatican City, you know, what's going to happen? You know, if a mob shows up, are they going to be given tents or are they going to be given the door? I think the door, yeah. You know, we have to learn from action. Yeah. And that the Holy See is protecting its own interests, which is fine. But it should let other countries do the same.
Yeah. Earlier in the letter, Pope Francis makes a comparison between all migrants and the Holy Family exiled from Nazareth. He writes, the family of Nazareth in exile, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, emigrants in Egypt and refugees there to escape the wrath of an ungodly king are the model, the example, and the consolation of emigrants and pilgrims of every age and country, of all refugees of every condition who are beset by persecution and necessity. And he goes on. This is a reference to Pius XII, who equated migrants with that, you know, with the Holy Family. My question is such a comparison here, is this apt, Bob? And wouldn't this nullify any notion of illegality when it comes to immigration or migration if everybody's Jesus, Mary, and Joseph?
Yeah, as somebody pointed out, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph did not emigrate across a national line. It was all Roman Empire, so it was just kind of moving from, you know, from Louisiana to Georgia or similar to something like that. Look, and the problem is simply not this. It isn't a matter of one person moving across the border. Tom Homan, in that wonderful interview you just did, she talked about how you overwhelm the border agents right at the point where they cross into this country. And of course, that is already a problem. We don't know who's coming in. It could be terrorists. They're cartel members. There are people, sex traffickers. All that is true. But one of the things that the Pope has constantly been emphasizing is that when people arrive in a country, they need to be integrated into the culture. And that's true. And that's one of the reasons why every country at least used to try to control how many people came in a given year. Now, we legally allow about 1 million, maybe even a little more than 1 million every year. That's quite a few people. And you were right to say, Raymond, that we're very generous people in that regard.
I want to move on to some appointments of new bishops this week in the U.S. There are two in particular I want to highlight. The former Bishop of Tucson, Edward Weisenberger, has been chosen as the new Archbishop of Detroit, Michigan. He'll replace long-serving Archbishop Alan Vigneron, who turned 75 in October. Bishop Robert Casey, an auxiliary from Chicago, has been appointed the new Archbishop of Cincinnati, replacing Archbishop Dennis Schnurr, who has been beset by a number of health issues. He's 76. Bishop Casey has been serving under Chicago Cardinal Supich. Father, what do you make of these appointments? What do they tell us about the Pope's vision for what the United States needs now?
Well, I think it's obvious that Cardinal Supich, who is the Archbishop of Chicago, is also a member of the Dicastery for Bishops, that he is having a great amount of influence with Pope Francis about the nomination of bishops. Because both of those men are from the Midwest, and now they are occupying important positions, archbishoprics, in the middle of the country, in the Midwest. So, Cardinal Supich's influence is clearly manifested here. And I don't know that much about both bishops, but I think that they are more in policy and practice line of Cardinal Supich than they would be of other members of the U.S. hierarchy. So I think Cardinal Supich's influence is quite plainly evident here. And I think as a result, we're going to see policies that he favors being given more prominence in the bishops' conference.
Bob, right now there are 22 American sees, if I'm reading that right, of the Latin Rite, run by bishops 75 years old or older. 22. That now includes Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York. What do you expect from the next round of appointments to the U.S. Episcopacy? And do you imagine they'll follow this trajectory, given that, as Father mentioned, Cardinal Supich, Cardinal Tobin, Wuerl are all members of that dicastery of bishops now?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we're going to see more of the same, at least from what we have seen the last three or four appointments. They all seem to be kind of pursuing a political line. I'm particularly disturbed about this Bishop Weisenberger, who talked about withholding communion for border guards who were enforcing the law. I mean, it just seems such a politically partisan way to go after people you don't like in the public square. I mean, look, Cardinal McElroy, who's coming here to Washington, D.C., I live outside of Washington, right. D.C., just said recently that the Trump administration is carrying out a war of fear and terror. This seems to me to be very extreme language. And you start talking about a legitimately elected president of the United States is carrying out a war inside of his own country. This is extreme rhetoric. And I hope that people like him, as they get into the positions, begin to recognize that they have to work with all Americans. Americans, whether he likes it or not, or the Holy Father likes it or not, knew what the alternatives were as we were about to enter into this new presidential cycle. They made the decisions that they did. As I said earlier, large percentages of Catholics, two-thirds of mass-going Catholics voted for President Trump. A majority, about 55-56% of the Catholics in general voted for Trump. So that's the reality. And they're going to have to deal with this. It's fine to remind people about human dignity, but as Father rightly said, this it doesn't really have a lot of purchase. We deserve to respect human dignity wherever we find it, not only with immigrants, people who are here illegally. So look, there's a different conversation that has to be had, and let's hope that a certain reality principle begins to assert itself as these people come into their offices.
Some disturbing news to report. On February 8th, a man recently desecrated the high altar at St. Peter's Basilica. He knocked over a massive candelabra, jumped onto the altar, pulled the altar cloth away. According to a Vatican spokesman, the man had, quote, serious mental disabilities and was handed over to Italian authorities. In Winnipeg, Canada, on February 9th, a man rushed the altar of the Holy Ghost Parish with a knife, attempting to attack the pastor. He then plunged the knife into the top of the altar before being subdued. Father, what do you make of these kinds of incidents and the seeming hostility toward the sacred and the church? And it appears to me that this is on the rise. And what of security, particularly at the parish level?
Right. Well, you know, mental illness and what it drives people to is a really tough nut to crack in the sense of if you can't anticipate, you don't know what's going to happen. What you can anticipate, in which the St. Peter's thing is very disturbing, is that people are going to try to jump on the main altar. Somebody did that last year. I can't believe that they didn't have a guard stationed, you know, immediately adjacent to the main altar to prevent this kind of thing from happening, because the man got up there, ripped off the altar cloths, and knocked down the candlesticks. It was disgraceful. Now, the real problem that we're facing, particularly in France, is the intentional burning down of Catholic churches. And this is, sad to say, often done by immigrants from Muslim countries who have a hostility to Christianity. And this, you know, we had Father Jacques Hamel was murdered in his church a couple of years ago. He's now a candidate for sainthood. So in France, there was a lot of anti-Catholic hostility being expressed, and the authorities, you know, they're not doing enough to stop it, in my opinion. This is something we have to be very conscious of. Religious liberty just doesn't mean the fact that I can go to church. It also means that the government is going to do everything it can to prevent attacks on religious buildings and people.
Yeah, look, I know parishes that now have a group of men who volunteer to basically watch the altar and watch the back of the church because fearing attacks just like this. And Bob, hostility and violence at churches in America are at an all-time high. According to the 2024 stats from the Family Research Council, an 800% increase in incidents from 2022 to 2023. Your thoughts on this?
As you know, Raymond, I've just written a second book on Christian martyrdom and persecution, which will be out in a few months, and I'm hoping to give Pope Francis a copy in May. It's sponsored by the Aid to the Church in Need. Our bishops carried out a survey of attacks on churches here in the United States, and they found that there were about 375 attacks since 2020. It was 2020 to 2024 in 44 different states in the United States, all sorts of different things, burnings, desecrations, statues beheaded, even in some cases the Eucharist attacked. So you're exactly right that is going on here in the United States as well, and in Canada, partly because of that unverified idea that there have been mass graves of children who were in these Indian schools that the church ran. But it's also in France, as Father Murray said. In my book, I discovered that France loses a religious building once every 2 weeks, so twice a month. a religious building is burned in France, and it's usually deliberate arson, rather typically by Muslims. But it's not only there. It's also in Germany. It's in Italy. It's in a variety of places.
Gentlemen, we will leave it there for now. For commentary by Robert Royal and Father Gerald Murray, visit thecatholicthing.org. Gents, we'll see you next time. Donald Trump has been president for less than a month, and there's already a whirlwind blowing through Washington, D.C. Elon Musk and Doge, spending cuts, controversial cabinet picks are being confirmed. And then there's all those executive orders. For more on this and analysis, we're joined by political commentator and senior political editor at The Blaze, Chris Bedford. Chris, thanks for being here. I want to get your take on this. I mean, we saw just in the last couple of days, President Trump's cabinet picks were confirmed at a very quick pace, faster than expected. On February 12th, Tulsi Gabbard was confirmed by the Senate, sworn in as Director of National Intelligence. On Thursday, Health and Human Services, the new director, Robert Kennedy Jr., was confirmed. These were nominees. Each of them were former Democrats. How had these controversial nominees managed to, A, win over the GOP, Chris, and B, what does it say about Trump's popularity, the speed with which they were confirmed?
Oh, it says everything about his popularity. The Democrats are not in control anymore, obviously. They've lost the majority. Thanks to Harry Reid, they can't just hold things up anymore. The old Senate tactics they had available previously, even in the minority, have been wiped away by their own hand. So now what Donald Trump had to win over was Republicans. And the U.S. Senate, more than the party base, more than House of Representatives, more than anywhere really but the deep state, is a holdout of anti-Trump Republicanism. You've got the neoconservatism still lives large. Bush-style Republicanism still lives large in a lot of these older senators. Even though about 40% of the chamber has turned over since Donald Trump first ran for office successfully, that's still a huge amount of people who are left over from the days before and kind of like that. And these three picks in particular, Pete Hegseth, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK, were kind of sticks in the eyes of some of the older Republicans. They got their fight out on Hegseth, and they were beaten up over it. People fell in line. Mitch McConnell, who is basically every day demonstrating why he never should have been the Republican majority leader at all, was unable to get his allies to stick with him to sink that confirmation in the end. People didn't want to go against a president who had 53% approval ratings nationally and won the national popular vote. And now you've got Tulsi Gabbard coming through, RFK. This is a symbol of the change in the guard. The president is getting the administration that he wants, despite old-fashioned Republican pushback. They've pushed the Democrats aside. They're as lost as I've ever seen them. They're as lost probably as they have been since the 1980s on exactly where they're supposed to go and what they want to do next. And this is a great victory for him.
Chris, do you think it's the barrage of activity all at once? I mean, you've got the border initiatives. You've got Doge finding all this corruption in the USAID funding. You've got all these cabinet officials moving forward, agencies on the cutting block. I mean, it seems there's so much happening that the opposition party can't quite muster a defense because they don't know where the next volley's coming from.
That's definitely part of it. There's no other administration in modern political history that has had such an active first 2 months or month, really, as the Trump administration has. The amount that the things that have seemed like they were distant, far-off dreams that Republicans would like to talk about but never actually do are occurring on a daily basis. You can't keep up with it. Even after 5 o'clock, things are coming through. All the way down to the Kennedy Center's board being replaced, and Rick Grenell taking over the Kennedy Center, Donald Trump firing executives over there. They are playing very much in the Democrats' house, the Democrats' defensive zone, in a way that Republicans usually aren't used to. But at the same time, there's also been a real social media backlash. These senators who came out and thought that it was just like the olden times where they could do what they wanted and they could get their own agenda across despite what the American people had voted for, heard loud and clear over Pete Hegseth's confirmation in particular. And I think that put a large part into stepping them in line. Also, the Trump administration brought in a much more expert team this time. They prepared for battle. There was a lot of hardened veterans, people from the first administration. They knew what to do, and they've so far executed rather flawlessly.
Well, and sending these young hackers to all the agencies. Elon Musk was brilliant to suggest that because they sort of tapped into the root systems. Rather, I mean, normally, look, you and I know people from the Reagan administration, even during the Clinton administration, they tried to find government waste and bring it under control. But they did that by interviewing bureaucrats, and that went on for months and months. These people didn't play that game at all. They just went to the data and figured it out themselves. The New York Post is now reporting the Department of Health and Human Services from 2020 to 2024 spent, and I mentioned this earlier with Tom Holman, more than $22 billion on grants for migrants and migration programs, including, Chris, cars for migrants, small business loans for them. Your thoughts on this? And, of course, many Catholic NGOs and charities are tied to this money. They're in a lather over the cuts.
And they've been corrupted by pilots, by the emperor's coin here. This is something that has actually really hurt, I think, the credibility of some of these Catholic charities, not the local ones, not the local branches that you find in your parish and your city, but some of the ones that operate at a national and international level. Their priorities have been shifted by where the government money is. And of course, as we've learned over the last couple of years of Catholic problems within our own church, it's a lot easier for it to preach social justice than it is to preach transubstantiation. So sometimes priests seem to neglect the duties of the church, and the charities do as well. But this is something that has existed in the United States for decades, and it really ballooned. It mushroomed under President Barack Obama, this system of using the deep state and suing private companies and taking that money and giving it out to left-wing activist groups and giving out these massive loans to left-wing activist groups. It turns out that this huge ecosystem of left-wing nonprofits and anti-Christian, anti-Catholic nonprofits, anti-American sovereignty nonprofits are funded by us, the taxpayer. It's not some kind of massive grassroots effort. If it seems like you don't know who is actually behind this, it's because it's so hidden inside of the federal government. And it's being rooted out now. It's a big win for just trying to restore political activism to us, the people. And if we want to go left or right, that's fine. But it's not up to the government.
Chris, we are seeing the courts in a rather major way freeze or push back so many of President Trump's executive orders, whether that be civil servants, you know, being offered retirement, or, you know, other actions that he's attempting here. How major are these judicial oversights and rulings? And is this going to be, I mean, you wrote a recent column about this, about Lawfare. Is this going to be the resistance in the Trump administration from the courts?
This is how they're trying to do it. And I think it's going to take the Supreme Court stepping in. John Roberts, Chief Justice, is worried. One, he generally is favorable toward executive power. Two, he's really careful about the court's reputation and its power and its place in within the constitutional system that we have. And he's looking at these district judges who are issuing lawless, essential orders that tell the president he's not allowed to, like in the case of Manhattan judge, that his political appointees are not allowed to have access to information in the departments that they control. Those sorts of things are just blatant breakdowns of the separation of power, and it can't be allowed to continue. They're in a little bit of a stick here because typically, in order for the Supreme Court to consider a district judge's ability to make these nationwide injunctions, the Trump administration would first have to lose a case, essentially. The Supreme Court would have to decide, all right, this lower court's decision was correct, this is wrong. However, and this is the second part, they never had any right to issue a national injunction. You only have a right to issue injunctions in regards to the plaintiffs who are actually listed in your case. Now, this is established law. So these judges are going above and beyond. They're interpreting it their own way. And I do think that because of Roberts' love of the court and hope that he wants to avoid any kind of a crisis or showdown, he's going to try and make that happen sooner than later.
Chris Bedford, we will leave it there. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have for now. Be sure to catch us next week. Until then, we'll be scouting the world over for all that is seen and unseen. On behalf of the staff and crew of EWTN News, thank you for watching. I'm Raymond Arroyo. Bye now.